Wajid Hassan, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. I'm very excited to speak with you. How are you?
Good, Shane. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a great conversation today. Now, Wajid, you're an author, a speaker, an actor, a comedian. I mean, you've had your hand in so many fields, and you know, you're on today to speak about some of the stuff that you talk about in your book, which is called The Struggle for World Sanity, which is available for purchase on Amazon or wherever people can buy books. I'll link it in the description. And in it, you detail some, you know, really extraordinary experiences that you've had over your life and some of the wisdom that you've gained. And we're going to discuss some of that today. So, yeah, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
So how about we start off today with just a quick story about how you sort of entered the mystical or spiritual world, or what drew you to that path, you know, at a young age?
I'm a firm believer in reincarnation. I believe that's a truth that needs to be told worldwide right now. It's something that's important that people realize that we just don't have one life to live, and then we get premonitions from previous lives. We're attracted to things from previous lives. We don't understand why we are. There's people who go to places and they realize, oh, I've been here before, or they want to go on vacation somewhere and they realize that they've been there before. But that's another subject. But just going back to my own spiritual journey, I was born in Pakistan, and my parents moved to England when I was 3 years old, and I lived in the north of England till the age of 10, and then my parents moved to London and went to high school in the east end of London, and then continued my education and got into the technical field. But I was primarily raised in a Muslim environment, Muslim background. So I went to the mosque, I studied the Quran, I did the Arabic prayers. And at the same time, being in England, I went to Church of England schools. And so I was getting an education during the day with Bible studies, hymns, carols. And so I got best of both worlds, both in Islam and Christianity. And to me, Shane, I really didn't see any difference between the two ideologies. They both pretty much taught the same thing, that, you know, be kind to each other, serve, and, you know, follow divinity. Just two different paths to a higher source. And then at the age of 16, I found my own spiritual guru, my own yogi master by the name of Dr. George King. And then from there, I started following him. And so I've been doing that for the last over 40 years now.
Right. And what was it that drew you to Dr. King?
It was really interesting. I picked up a copy of a book that he published called The 12 Blessings. And in there, he was overshadowed by no other personage than the Master Jesus himself, who transmitted 12 blessings over a period of 12 consecutive Sundays, which were an extension of his teachings from the Sermon of the Mount over 2,000 years ago. So he was shadowed by this great master. So I read this book. And I read it. It didn't inspire me. It wasn't a great white light experience. I just read it logically, and I thought, this makes sense. But at the same time, I thought to myself, either this man is a genius or he's the biggest fraud whoever lived. So I have to investigate. And so I investigated and found out he was a genius.
Okay, fair enough. So Dr. King has a very interesting work, and you know, I've read up a bunch about him and his teachings and his philosophies, and you know, one of the interesting things about it, at least for me, is that, you know, as opposed to many other sort of spiritual teachers or, you know, ancient yogis or however you'd like to call it, he's very much involved in the extraterrestrial side of things, right? And that's fascinating to me. And that's in the sense of, like, he's had various experiences with, you know, extraterrestrials, as have you. And, you know, that's definitely something that I'd love to get into with you, if that's cool. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, Shane, you know, for many, many years, people who believed in UFOs, extraterrestrial life, they were kind of looked upon as kind of quacks or weirdos. And of course, Dr. King got his fair share of criticism and put downs in the 50s and 60s.
I'm sure.
When he said he was in contact with extraterrestrial beings. But it's very fascinating that, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of interest again in the media of UFOs, and the US Pentagon disclosed information.
Yeah.
And also, I think this coming June the 24th, there's going to be more disclosures on their projects that they had on researching of UFOs. So this thing is not going away. The question is, again, on everybody's mind is, you know, who are these people who man these UFOs, and where are they from, and why are they here, and have they made contact? And all those questions were pretty much answered by researching my own yogi master, Dr. George King. And, you know, I said to your listeners, don't take my word on face value. Do what you did, Shane, and you know, do your own research. They can go on Dr. King's website, his organization's website, the Aetherius Society, aether.org, aetherius.org, and do their own research. But just give you a basic background to your listeners on who Dr. George King was. In his early 20s, he was an Englishman. In his early 20s, he was a section leader for the London Fire Brigade during World War II, during the Nazi Blitz over Germany. And he had the very terrible task of search and rescue and saving lives. And so it really affected him when he had to pick up parts of little children, and he questioned why all this suffering. And again, premonitions from his previous existence, his previous lives, brought into fruition. And after the war, the age of 25, he got into a serious study of yoga, not just hatha yoga, but yoga breathing exercises, mantra yoga, kundalini yoga, to the point where, Shane, he was actually practicing yoga for up to 8 to 10 hours a day on top of his normal job, which was at that time a London cab driver. And he did that for over 10 years. And it was then, after he reached a certain stage of, I would say, evolution, where he could raise the power of kundalini up to higher psychic centers from the heart center above and gain these exalted states of samadhi, nirvana, people call cosmic consciousness. It was only then that he was contacted by the beings who man the space called flying saucers or UFOs. So it's very interesting that he had to reach a certain stage of evolution, a certain vibrational, you know, sequence, high vibrational sequence, in order for them to contact him. So it wasn't a case of they contacted him. He had to reach that stage before they contacted him. And then from there, he was a channel for over 600 cosmic transmissions, which he did in a deep yogic somatic trance, where he would tune into the mental impulses sent by these beings and then translate it through his larynx, being an Englishman, would come out in English. And a lot of these transmissions are absolutely phenomenal teachings where, you know, they're designed to help mankind, raise mankind, warn mankind from his past and his present, and warn mankind about his possible future. So, you know, just just fascinating truths.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very interesting that, like, you know, you say he spent 10 years doing like 8 hours of yoga a day, which is, I mean, you know, insane commitment and dedication. Yeah. Not in a bad way, just from a discipline perspective.
Incredible discipline.
Yeah, and he didn't even know, from what I understand from what you're saying, he wasn't even trying to do anything in particular, you know, that sort of led to this encounter with these beings that, you know, later then became transmissions, and, you know, that sort of developed his whole career in the field. Work and teachings in the field. But, like, he wasn't trying to do that from the beginning. He was just embedded in this yogic practice, right?
Yeah, at the time, before he was contacted, he didn't know anything about UFOs. Mm-hmm. Just like I didn't know anything about UFOs when I had my UFO experience. So
yeah.
He was more into the field. He did some, he was a medium in his own right, where he would channel beings from the higher realms of Earth, but not from beings from other planets. And at that time, he was engaged in research into spiritual healing, and he was engaged in research into using healing to cure certain forms of cancer. And mm-hmm. So he was working with intelligences from the higher realms to help look into that. And then he was suddenly contacted out of the blue by a cosmic master by the name of Aetherius, which the society's name is from. And it really took him out in a loop, because he didn't understand. The command was, you are to become the voice of interplanetary parliament, and he didn't know what interplanetary parliament was.
Right.
And it just really confused him till he went into deep meditation. He said he went into meditation to find the answers, because nobody could give him the answers. And he said he would go into meditation till he died to find the answer. And this Indian master came through his door, materialized in front of him, and gave him assurance that this command was true, and gave him instructions on how to do advanced yogic exercises. And at that time, Dr. Kim mentioned that he was a living master in India, but now research have concluded that it was actually the Swami Vivekananda.
Hmm. Wow. And, I mean, that must have been a crazy experience for him, right? Just all of a sudden one day getting this communication that, you know, says that you'll be the voice of interplanetary parliament, or is that what you said? And I mean, like, what do you do with that?
It was Swami Sivananda, not Vivekananda. Okay.
Yeah, no worries. But even so, I mean, to go from, like, it's almost from like 0 to 100, just you're kind of just being thrown in it, right? I mean, it must have been a very strange experience for
him. Well, it was a shocking experience for him. He said he was washing dishes, and, you know, the dishes just fell on the floor, because it was a voice outside of himself. And as a trained yogi, he could discriminate between, you know, just psychic apparitions, and he couldn't figure out something like that. And it got to the point where, just before the first public transmission from the Master Therese, all his friends left him. He was completely alone.
Right.
So I can't imagine that loneliness of saying that I've been contacted by extraterrestrials. Everybody just left his side, and then he pretty much had to start all over on his own. So he, to me, was a fantastic, brave, incredible spiritual pioneer. He forged ahead despite all the odds and succeeded, and now people are slowly beginning to understand who this yogi master was by the name of Dr. George King.
Mm-hmm.
It may take a few more centuries for them to fully understand how advanced this man was, because he kind of stayed incognito quite a bit.
Yeah.
And a lot of his missions that he did were kind of kept under wraps. So there's a lot of masters or teachers who are very well known, who are extremely rich, who are very popular. I can name one in India right now who's just got, makes millions of dollars. But Dr. King wasn't interested in anything material. You know what's really interesting, Shane? Mm. One of his orders when he got contacted with the Cosmic Masters was that he had to give up all material possessions. Hmm. And to the point where he had a couple of, I think, motorcycles, a couple of cars, everything. He gave everything up till all he had was a suit of clothing. Wow. As a test from the Cosmic Masters that, you know, to detach from all things material. So he was never a materialistic man.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, that's very interesting because, you know, the practice of giving up materialistic goods has been in many spiritual disciplines for centuries or millennia even, where, you know, that form of detachment from the world, it's not new, right? And so it's very interesting that, like, he was also put through that test to see how he would deal with it, or it was part of some bigger plan of something. I mean, you know, it worked for him. What came of it was great things for him.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt
no,
you, but
go ahead.
It's really, really interesting that in the world today, people in the corporate world, billionaires, are looked upon as gods because, you know, in the media and everything, you know, the more rich you are, the more powerful, the more you're looked up upon. And, you know, and on the spiritual path, it's always talked about, you know, moving from the material to the spiritual. And most of the great masters were very humble people who weren't interested in materialism. One exception to the rule, of course, was the Lord Buddha, who was born a prince. But even then, he had to give up his worldly princedom, mm-hmm. and his palace and his 500 wives and everything to go out in the wilderness as a beggar in order to gain enlightenment. So,
right.
I guess, yeah, you're right. I guess it's a form of test.
Yeah.
On the spiritual path to detach from the material as you evolve to the spiritual. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and there's also this interesting dynamic of, like, people who seem to accumulate, you know, ever-growing numbers of possessions and things like that and wealth, and then many people at some point reach a place where they're like, oh, this isn't actually going to make me happy. And then they're like, I got too much shit going on, too much clutter. And then they revert to this, like, minimalist lifestyle or whatever it's called, where you kind of, you know, you live off as basic a few things as possible. Now, that's not everyone, but some people are doing that. And I think many people do it, you know, not necessarily trying to be spiritual, just trying to figure out what's what. But that's besides the point.
There was a famous actor, I won't name him, but he put a posting on Facebook, and he said, I wish that everybody in the world could have what I had, as far as, you know, cars and houses and mansions and money, and then realize that it's not really where it's at.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's quite, I mean, you know, for me, I use the example of, like, so many people achieve financial success or whatever sort of material success that they're going for, and yet, or, you know, you can see it in, like, rock stars and musicians and actors and things like that, and they're still terribly plagued with, you know, suffering, and many of
right.
them, unfortunately,
right.
you know, end up, like, committing suicide and
yeah.
you know, think, and or just being miserable or whatever it is, which is, you know, very sad. Like, it's not a condemnation from me. It's sort of just evidence that it doesn't fulfill you. I mean, listen, it's going to grant you certain privileges in the world and abilities to do things and access to stuff, and that's all relatively important, but it's not that essential importance of something like a spiritual practice, right?
I mean, Dr. King said, you know, material things are important, but not critical.
Yeah.
But he said, you can't be a beggar and beg for food and be on the spiritual path in these days. You've got to have material possessions.
Sure.
But not to the excess. You know, I mean, all of us need a place to stay, maybe a car, some money in the bank. I mean, we all need that for our basic necessities. But, you know, to become a billionaire. And one thing that people need to realize is that we're all metaphysically connected to each other. We're all part, yeah, of one race. And Dr. King made a shocking statement once. He said, for every millionaire, there has to be millions who are going to be poor. That's how it works out on the metaphysical scale.
A balance.
So for all these billionaires, more people are going to get poor. So wealth,
yeah,
has to be distributed equally to everybody, because we're all part of the same race. We're not different in any ways.
Yeah, and you know, the more we can sort of band together and do things as a human race rather than any sort of subgroup that you want to call yourself, the sort of better off we'll be, hopefully. But I actually just want to take a step back for a sec. I'd love to talk about your experience with extraterrestrials. What was your first one, and what was that like for you? What happened there?
It was very interesting because I was 18 at the time, and you know, I published the book last year because, you know, again, I've never possessed myself as being a, you know, a teacher or whatever, or an author, but when the book came out, it reached number one, a bestseller on Amazon, on two categories, spirituality and mysticism and UFOs. Of course, it didn't stay number one, but it just showed me, Shane,
still impressive,
there's a tremendous interest in the subject of flying saucers and spirituality, mysticism.
Oh yeah.
And so the experience I had, I really kept to myself because it was very personal, and over my life, I really didn't tell many people about it. But I felt at this time, with the state of the world as it is, that I reveal this so that people be inspired and know that I speak from my heart, the truth, as opposed to trying to make it up or trying to look good or trying to get some fame on it. But I had this strong premonition. I was in London at the time that I needed to be at a certain place, mm-hmm, at a certain time, and on the third day, I just couldn't ignore it. So I got a map out of England, and I started tracing my finger across England to see where I needed to be. And it stopped at this place called Salisbury, which is near Stonehenge. Hmm. And my finger pointed to a place just 3 miles outside of Salisbury, a place called Clearwater. And I knew I had to be there that Friday at midnight. Don't ask me why. Those are the mental impulses that I got. So I took the bus to Salisbury that night from London, and got to Salisbury at 10:30, and then I started walking down these country lanes in the pitch black, till I reached the Clearwater, this area of Clearwater, and I jumped over this fence by this lake, and exactly at midnight I looked up and I saw this white disc-shaped object moving from the south to the north, and I realized that I was in the right place. And then at 1:30 in the morning, another white disc-shaped object moved from the west to the east, and that to me signified the sign of the cross. I don't know why, mm-hmm, but you know, the cross is a very ancient symbol, long before Christianity, which depicts the ascension of man,
sure,
to divinity. And at I was really cold, and at exactly three in the morning, a much larger spacecraft, physical, this wasn't a psychic apparition, physical spacecraft came over and hovered over me and stopped about 100 yards above me, and this white light came from the hull of the spacecraft, and this tremendous spiritual energy went through me to the state where I was in a kind of a mystic, beautiful state. And to me, the energy was like the beings who were sending this energy from the spacecraft. To me, the impression I got were very ancient, extremely advanced scientifically, but also very spiritual. And it left me with that feeling. So coming back again to the subject of UFOs, there seems to be a tremendous fear, sensationalism, fear, abductions, and all this other business that goes on about UFOs. But the transmissions and the information that Dr. King received shows that these are very compassionate beings who man these spacecraft. And so I want to again throw that out to your listeners that, again, with this UFO phenomena getting more and more popular, there seems to be this sense of fear and sensationalism, and that is incorrect, because if these beings, being that advanced, wanted to take over this planet, and in fact Dr. King asked them once in a mental transmission how long it would take for them to take over this planet, and they said between 10 and 15 minutes. So that's the kind of power that's out there right now, and these are the kind of people that are watching us at this time.
No, listen, it makes sense that, you know, people are afraid. I mean, you know, perhaps they needn't be, but what you don't know tends to be feared a lot of the time, right? Or what you don't understand.
Exactly, yeah.
But so, okay, so when you were out in this at Clearwater, right? And so you saw these two light discs that flew in the shape of a cross sequentially. And was that, how far away was that from you? Was that like really far away, or?
Yeah, that was okay. Pretty high
and
up.
And then you still had that sense that you just must stay there, like.
Yeah, that feeling was to just stay there.
And,
And again, I didn't know what to expect. What were I expecting? And suddenly that happened, you know. And also in the book, me and two other friends, when we were in Los Angeles, had a very good, extremely good UFO sighting. Mm. That's in the book as well. So I had an independent sighting, and I had one in collaboration with two other people. Right. So they can't argue with that one.
No, but this first one is interesting, because it wasn't just a sighting. There was an interaction that went place, that took place, sorry.
Yes.
Right? And so...
Yeah, it was a mental interaction. Yeah.
Sure. You know, however it manifested, there was something was going on. You didn't just see...
Something touched me.
You didn't just see something and then... That was the end of it. It was like, no, there was some kind of exchange. And so when this light shone upon you, and you said you entered this, like, you know, transient state, how long did that last? Or was time kind of like,
I don't know. I can't remember. It could have been a couple of seconds. It could have been a couple of minutes. I don't know.
And there was just a feeling just of peace for you.
A tremendous upliftment, love, feeling of being loved, peace, all the above,
And absolutely. And were there any, like, messages?
And again, there was no message, but the impression, I don't think, you know, we refer to these beings as cosmic masters. I don't think that cosmic masters do anything for one reason. I think that experience wasn't just for me. I think that experience was for the whole world, to let, because if it was just a personal experience, they wouldn't have done that. I think that experience was important, so that when I published the book, to let people know that these beings are very compassionate, and they've saved us from catastrophe, even in recent years. And we could expand on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me that, you know, our minds tend to not be able to see big pictures very clearly. We can see sort of small big pictures, but not like big pictures, right? Particularly from like a temporal perspective, where it's like one action can have huge consequences, you know, either sort of good or bad. But the impact that you know, like that interaction, which was, you know, a few minutes or whatever, however long it was, or even if it was a few hours, like it doesn't matter. And that was sort of just for you. Well, that's now having a much bigger impact on the world, right? And potentially on everyone, because, you know, just sort of from a brief calculation perspective, it's like, well, if you impact 1,000 people in a particular way, and each of those people impact 1,000 people, that's a billion already. No, it's not a billion. Yes, it is a billion. No, 1,000 is a million, and then 1,000 of those is a million.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like three steps away from most people in the world, or at least a good number of them. And that's just like one thing. So it makes sense to me that, like, you know, one interaction that at the time doesn't seem, you know, people might wonder, like, well, why didn't they do that to everyone? And it's like, well, I don't know. You don't know everything. I don't know. You know, none of us know at that kind of a level that we could imagine that these beings would be at. Like, things have a much bigger consequences and can be interpreted in different ways. And, you know, so things get done for particular reasons, even if we don't exactly know those reasons, right?
Yeah, and the question is, well, why did they contact Dr. King and nobody else? You know, I think they're highly intelligent, and they pick people like Dr. King as a medium for their teachings. They probably knew that way in advance, a few centuries before they even contacted Dr. King, that they were going to contact him. I think that's how they work. Coming back to, you know, there was the compassion and friendliness of these beings. There was a transmission Dr. King received from one particular extraterrestrial by the code name of Mars Sector 6, and he said that flying saucers are real. Flying saucers are friendly. Your government knows this, and so this disclosure that the U.S. government apparently is going to say will probably be half truth anyway, because they still have a lot of information on, like most governments have, on UFOs, on these alien spacecraft, on these cosmic beings. But they're deliberately holding them back, primarily because if people realize that there are beings who are more advanced scientifically and spiritually than we are, they won't be looking down on their smartphones at the gloom and doom that's been churned out. They'll start looking up into the skies, and you know, the question is, why are the cosmic masters here? Well, you know, they're saying, look, you know, you were at one time advanced spiritual beings, and you've regressed tremendously, and you're regressing more, where, you know, you're just going to invoke more negative karma against yourself. So they're saying at this time that we need to rise en masse. There's two factors behind that. First of all, we're now in the Aquarian Age. The Aquarian Age, astrologically, you know, the planets influence. But the Aquarian Age is pushing mankind to be more spiritual, more giving, more caring, not just for his friends and family, but for the country, for the world. And another aspect that people don't understand is that the Earth herself is a beautiful living goddess that people have known for centuries, especially the indigenous tribes around the world. And we have abused and raped this beautiful planet that we live on. And she has also been told by higher cosmic, she actually received tremendous amount of energies on July the 8th, 1964, from the cosmic masters, where she received what was called a primary initiation. And from there, every year, she's also raising her vibration. She's slowly releasing this energy. And one aspect of that is the climate change, where the ice caps are melting, the ionosphere is being taken down, the ultraviolet rays are increasing. So don't believe everything the media tells you, that global warming is a result of carbon emissions. Again, they haven't disclosed the fact that this global warming is also part of this, climate change is also part of Mother Earth raising her vibrations, because, you know, part of reading of creating and writing the book was to give your listeners a sense of hope, a light in the darkness, because, you know, as you can tell right now, the world is not in a very good position. And this raising of vibrations from the Mother Earth, the Aquarian age, over the centuries, is going to herald in a new age for mankind, an age of peace, cooperation, no more wars. And all this is not might, is not may or might, it will, is going to happen. And again, that's why the reason the cosmic masters are in the skies right now is they're pleading for mankind to raise themselves up from the, like you said, from the material to the spiritual.
So are you saying that, like, you know, the climate change and the energies that are coming from Mother Earth, like, that's a, in a sense, a good thing? Or it's at least a natural part of the evolution of at least humanity and Earth.
Well, it's a very good thing for the Mother Earth, and it's a very good thing for mankind. I believe they say that, I think the Mayan calendar finished in 2012, and that's interesting because they, you know, they predicted the end of the world. 2012, which actually is not the end of the world, it's the beginning of a new world, a new age, the great change that's occurring now. If we don't raise our vibrations in accordance to what's going on, the cosmic masters have said that we will, after death, in mercy, be reincarnated on another planet in this solar system. Scientists have called this planet X, which is on the other side of the solar system from Earth. We can't see it, but based on their calculations, from the magnetic pull, that it is there. They say it's about 10 times the size of Earth, and the cosmic and the polluters, those who won't conform, and unfortunately I don't think there will be, I don't think everybody will conform, and they will, after the initiation of death, be taken to this planet and start their evolutionary cycle on that planet. So that's another necessity from the message of the cosmic masters for mankind to rise at this present moment.
So when you talk about rising and increasing vibration, what does that mean? Like, what does that look like for people?
The most safe, there's yoga exercises that you can do which can raise the vibrations very quickly, but those are very, very dangerous, like Kundalini yoga or going into extremely painful hatha yogic poses can raise your vibrations, can bombard Kundalini with pranic energies and raise the Kundalini up to higher centers, but that's very dangerous. And what the cosmic masters are saying is the more safer, natural way is to send out spiritual power. And spiritual power or spiritual energy, the energy called LOVE, is a very tangible, real energy. And what they're saying is all you have to do is think of this energy, send it through your brain, charge your brain, raise your hands like this and send it out, and from the heart center, which is 6 inches in front of your breastbone. One way that your listeners can actually verify, I mean, it's like the energy of electricity. We don't see electricity, but we know what it can do, and the subtle, the pranic energies are more subtle but very tangible energy, and your listeners can just go in front of a mirror and visualize this light going out to the mirror, and it'll reflect back. You can feel a tingling around the fingers and around the aura. So it's a very real energy. And, you know, back in the 70s they had that oil embargo and people were talking about an energy crisis, and what Dr. King said was that There's only one energy crisis on this planet right now, and that's the spiritual energy crisis. So if we solve that crisis, it will automatically solve problems between countries and even in your personal life by sending this. And you know, again, coming back to, well, who are we? We're spiritual beings in physical bodies. It's not the other way around. And so we've regressed to the point where we're not using the energies from the higher psychic centers. And what the spiritual energy will do, it has it's beneficial in two ways. First of all, if you send this spiritual energy out for healing and peace, world healing, to your friends and family or anybody, first of all, you're doing them good. Another thing is, you know, action and reaction being opposite and equal, that and that same spiritual energy you send out, you receive. And as you receive that energy, it will raise your vibration. So the power of Kundalini will rise naturally in a very unforced fashion. And so you will be able to reach these high states of elevation slowly, but in a more sure, safer manner. And Dr. King wrote a book back in the 60s called The Nine Freedoms. And in the Nine Freedoms, first of all, he outlined the true history of mankind, which we may go into, sure, if we have time. But he also outlined the fact that, you know, he set forth the evolutionary cycle, which was a series of cosmic transmissions that he received for the evolutionary cycle of mankind, mm-hmm, into the future. And one thing that was really, really intriguing that, you know, as a yogi master, he could project from his physical body. So he projected from his physical body, and he was invited to this spacecraft, which was in orbit of Earth by the name of Satellite Number 3. And he went on there, and he saw many things which he related in the book, including an initiation ceremony that he witnessed on this spacecraft. But what he also mentioned that on the spacecraft was very advanced radionic computer systems that these cosmic masters had. And then in a transmission later, it was revealed by another cosmic master that on this spacecraft they have, they said, we have instrumentations beyond the imagination of any terrestrial scientist. And on this, just to give you a basic understanding, I mean, terrestrial science these days, with a GPS satellite, you can pretty much pinpoint now anybody on Earth with a cell phone, and that's just basic terrestrial science. And if you advance that maybe millions of years ahead, on this spacecraft, they have a complete vibrational sequence of every man, woman, child, fish, rock, plant, right, on the planet, from the past, from the present, into the future. And so this, when this spacecraft comes into orbit, the next magnetization period will be July the 5th to August the 5th this year. We can actually contact this spacecraft with our mental beams, with our mental thoughts, and attract this energy, and energy will be sent from this spacecraft, you know, from the sun, the pranic energies. They manipulate through their instrumentations. How they do it, I have no idea. It's just beyond me. But they can beam down individually to any individual on the planet energies, spiritual energies, which will help raise their vibrations, they say, to a factor of 3,000 times more than if we just did it on our own. And this, to me, is beyond science fiction. To me, this is a tremendous amount of hope. To me, it's a tremendous amount of compassion that we have people in the skies of that caliber, of that evolution, that are watching over us at this time. And, you know, in case your listeners may be raising their eyebrows, Dr. King, the reason I've been following him over the last 40 plus years, said that he made a solemn statement that if he said anything in front of anybody, that he would, in front of his creator, would speak the truth, because he said, if you want to find truth, you have to speak the truth. So he would say things which made him extremely unpopular in the 50s and 60s. It cost him a lot of money, cost him a lot of popularity, but he stood his ground and spoke the truth. And so one way that your listeners, we can all actually contact the Cosmic Masters. We may not get a message from them, we may not get a sighting from them, but they will send this tremendous spiritual power to us as their way of being of service to us. I mean, to me, you know, I wrote in my book that your intuition is probably the greatest lie detector ever built in creation, because if you use your intuition, you can discriminate between what is lies and what is truth, instead of looking to the media. And again, all your listeners have to do is just think of the Cosmic Masters, and these beams of energies will be sent to you to help not only yourself in your personal life.
And how fortuitous that, you know, that time is coming up in just a few weeks from now. It's quite a, you know, synchronous event that's happening. So when you say that people can think about, you know, the Cosmic Masters, what does that mean? Like, what kind of thoughts do you hold in your head, or you know, how do you go about that?
Well, they say, you know, a microwave, you know, technology from a satellite can instantly, you know, pinpoint, you know, a cell phone user or a person using a GPS navigation system in their car. So that's pretty fast. But the speed of thought in free space has been calculated to be like 4 million times, you know, the speed of light. And so they pick up on thought impulses. So they have the vibrational sequence of all of us. So when we think of them and send our mental beams to them, their computer systems can pick up that thought process. And they have computer systems and AI technology, which is, Dr. King says, is a complete different mathematical concept from earth science. And again, I can't describe the wondrous technology, but they can pick up any thought impulse, and all we have to do is request this energy, and this energy will come down mentally. And I say you can see as a beam of white light charging your brain, going over your shoulder, out to your heart center, and the palms of your hand, And what they're saying is you can be of any religion, any denomination. You don't even have to believe in God or any divinity. You just have to have this compassion, this feeling that you want to serve. And so they don't look at any particular race, any religion. They say even if you're a mass murderer and at that time you want to do some good, they will beam that energy down. And so to me, I think it's the greatest message of hope that I've ever come across in all my life, that there is a hope for the planet Earth based on these wondrous cosmic beings that are.
And also it would seem that time. Like, you know, according to what you're saying, it's like the great difficulties and struggles that we're going through right now and have been for a while, it's like that's supposed to happen, or it's part of the evolution of mankind, right? Where it's, you know, if you just look at evolution, like historically speaking, it's like everything that evolves goes through immense difficulty and struggle in order to evolve, right? It doesn't happen just lazing about or whatever it is. It's like, no, you got to be pushed to evolve. And so, you know, in that sense, humanity needs to be pushed. I mean, we're sort of doing it to ourselves, or the, you know, you could say that the universe is doing it to us. I mean, there's lots of ways to characterize what's happening, but we're certainly, it seems to be the case that like the difficulty in the world is not getting easier. If anything, it arguably is getting more difficult. I mean, it's complicated, and you know, there's many aspects to it, and I certainly don't understand the technical difficulties of it, or the like long-winded historical narrative, but just from what you're saying, it's important to have that hope, right? And it's more than hope. It's a knowing that it's going to be okay, right? Like that we will evolve through this difficulty and reach that point of peace.
Yeah, you know, again, you know, you talk about evolution. Nothing can stop evolution. Nothing can stop, you know, evolution from going forward. We can hold ourselves back. We can regress. And even the cosmic masters have said that we regress. So they didn't even expect us to regress so far. You know, if you look at the state of the planet right now, we have these endless wars, this economic system that's so unfair. We have hatred between races and religions and pollution. I mean, it could go on and on and on. But, you know, we can't blame God or anybody else for this mess that we're in. We as a race have to accept this responsibility that we have regressed by not obeying the spiritual laws of things like thou shalt not kill and being, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. I mean, all these basic spiritual laws we've regressed from. And we've been also manipulated by a minority who are in power, not only on the physical realm, you know, but Dr. King, you know, in Hindu and Buddhist philosophies, they talk about different realms of existence when we die and we go through that. Dr. King projected to these realms. He said there was four realms below us and six realms above us. And so, you know, on the realms below us, there are demonic forces, beings that mentally have enslaved mankind in many, many, many ways. And they also see their end coming as with the raising of these vibrations. And so they're trying as much as possible to create more wars or a nuclear holocaust or whatever, and so that they can keep power in these lower realms. And so we, you know, in case your listeners are wondering, well, how, you know, where are these cosmic masters from? Dr. King wrote this book back in the 50s called You Are Responsible, where he projected to Mars and Venus and said that there were higher civilizations on Mars and Venus. Now, at that time, he was laughed at. And I agree with the scientists, you know, that if you went to Mars or Venus or Jupiter or Saturn on a physical realm, you probably, the idea of finding life would probably be minimal. But if you look on the fact that we have higher realms here on Earth, it's the same with other planets in the solar system and beyond. They also have higher realms. So he projected to levels like 4 and 5 on Mars and Venus, and conversed with the people who man these spacecraft or this advanced civilization. So he said, apart from Mercury, all the other planets in the system are inhabited by higher civilizations on higher realms. And even quantum physics today is agreeing, based on their calculations, that there could be parallel universes, you know, different dimensions. And so, in case your listeners are wondering, where are these people from? They are from this solar system, but living on a
higher mental plane. Right, so you're saying like the existence is sort of in different dimensions that we can't normally, quote-unquote, normally perceive, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. King said if people went to Mars, they could be on Mars, he said, for 100 years and not even know that advanced civilization was there, because they're on a higher vibrational dimension, higher frequency. And unless they made themselves known, we right. would never know that they
I mean,
even
it's
existed.
Very interesting, you know, and I won't dispute any claims because I don't know any better. So I don't know. I think I probably feel like many people do when you hear, you know, about these kinds of things, where there's this like conflicting sense of, well, it might be true, it's not true in my experience yet, but like, I mean, I'm, you know, at least open to the idea of it, you know, being the case. And you know, it's a very strange dynamic to like work through, like on a within yourself, right?
Well, it's never been revealed before. And it's a shock to the system when people hear it. It was a shock to my system when I heard that, because the, you know, the mind can only handle so much. And then, you know, it's like in the past, you know, pioneers, you know, when they said that, the earth is not flat, it's round, they were called heretics. And then I think astronomers, you know, they said no, the earth doesn't, the sun doesn't revolve around the earth, it's the other way around. And they were called heretics in their days. Even Nostradamus had to hide a lot of his predictions under, you know, code, and you know, so that he probably wouldn't have been arrested by the church or whatever as a blasphemer or a heretic. So throughout history, every spiritual pioneer, I mean, you know, they murdered the Master Jesus, you know, because he went against against the norm of those days. So Dr. King, again, in his day, he passed away in 1997. In his days, he was spat at, laughed at, ignored, and put down as a kook. And now people are slowly beginning to understand. And again, based on, as our technology advances, we seem to understand more and more about space and the possibility of life in the solar system and beyond. So that's a good thing about the advance of science, that we can be more open-minded. And young people these days, I think their intelligence is being insulted when the media or the government says, well, you know, they may be or may not be extraterrestrial life.
It's interesting because we live in an age, at a point in history where technology has evolved sufficiently far to the point where things aren't impossible anymore. What used to be science fiction is now reality. And so,
I wouldn't have dreamed 30 years ago that I'd be talking to you in real time in Toronto.
We've reached a point where it's like we're limited by our imagination, really. I mean, perhaps we won't achieve it in our lifetime or something like that, but no longer would it be strange for someone to say, like, oh no, that's possible. Like, no, we can definitely go to other planets now. Like, you know, 100 years ago, before they even went to the moon, if you would have told people that we would develop these massive spacecraft that can go to the moon and go to other planets, they definitely would have not, well, I mean, I don't know about definitely, but most people probably would have said, no, you can't do that. Science doesn't let you, right? Or something like that. And then it evolves, and then we reach a point where now if, you know, you say, oh, could we go to like the nearest galaxy? I mean, the scientists would be like, I mean, it's possible. We can't right now, but that's just a limit of technology. It's not an impossibility. And the same thing with like, it's at the you know, whim of your imagination of science fiction what might become reality. And certainly with our knowledge of the universe, cosmology or astronomy, it's like the number of planets and galaxies and solar systems are so large, it's incomprehensible how many there are, that it would be it's a little bit, I mean, I don't know what the right word is, but to say that we're the only life in the entire universe, I mean, I think it's egoistic or egotistic, whatever the word is, right? It's like, I mean, I get why you would say that. And it's kind of like, you know, it's because it's, again, like what we said earlier, it's about when you don't know, it's scary, right?
Well, I think it's all, there's also red tape. I think there's a cover up. I think NASA knows. There was evidence of astronauts being followed by UFOs when they went to the moon. You know, there's so many examples. I don't even have to go through.
Yeah, I mean, all the tapes that have been released by the Pentagon just within the last few months. It's so weird, and I mean, not weird as in bad. It's just like, who would have thought that? Like, it brings up the question, like, why now? Why are they releasing this stuff? They don't have to, but they are, right?
Well, I think it was part of the COVID package that Donald Trump put in, that he wanted that revelation put in as well in regards to that research project. So that was part of the COVID package. So that's why they've been forced to release their information. And I still think they'll probably bring it out as half truth. I think there's a control issue because they don't want the masses to know the truth behind the UFOs, because again, people will look to the skies instead of being manipulated and molded like we have over the centuries by the minority who are extremely powerful, extremely rich, and let's face it, extremely brilliant in their manipulation of the masses. So that's what's happening. And that, I think that's all because of the vibrational sequence because of the vibrations of the influence of the Aquarian Age and the Mother Earth. A lot of these bonds are being broken. A lot of these, you know, truths are going to be revealed, and people will rise up in a very peaceful, there will be a mental peaceful revolution that is going to occur in the next few centuries, and that which was hidden is going to be revealed out into the open.
And what's that so expression? That's another truth is stranger than fiction, right? A lot of the time. But yeah, it's a very interesting idea and topic, and I love discussing it and hearing people's stories, and it's something that, you know, we need at the moment, and especially that glimmer of hope, right, where things seem to be bad.
To me it is the biggest glimmer of hope I've ever come across. And if people it's just like riding a bicycle. If people are not familiar about sending out spiritual energy, I belong to a group over 50 countries, and we do that on a regular basis to send out spiritual power to the world. So if people want to join in, there's a website they can go to called 12blessings.org, then 12 being numerical, and just try it for themselves, you know, if they don't know how to do it. And they can join us. We do it every day, pretty much every day. And so that's another thing. Or again, you know, do it in your own, with your own religious views, your own beliefs. Or again, if you don't even have any beliefs, just a yearning to help the world and to help your friends and family, just send out the light. It's that simple. The cosmic masters do all the manipulation. They do the work behind the scenes. And I think, Shane, because it's so simple, it goes over people's heads, that the big message is send out the light. That's all they're saying. You know, it's nothing complicated. Because it's not complicated, I think it goes over people's head. But that is what we need to do in these days in order to save.
Right. And I also really like that it's, you know, centered around love and the idea of service to others. In the sense of, like, you're not doing it to empower yourself, right? You're doing it to empower everyone or everything, you know, depends which level you're looking at it with. But listen, I've really enjoyed this conversation today. I think it's been super interesting, and I thank you again for coming on. And people should go and buy your book. It's called The Struggle for World Sanity. It's available, and I'll put a link to it, you know, in the description, and I'll link to that 12blessings.org that you said, if people want to check that out. And yeah, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
And also the Masters, organization, Aetherius.org as well.
But yeah, thanks for coming on, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Thank you, Shane. It was a great talk. I appreciate it.